Lecture 24, The Well-Adjusted Personality.
When we dig deeply into people's personalities, we find remarkable complexity, a large variety of traits and motivations, emotional tendencies, beliefs, self-evaluations, styles of thinking, self-regulatory processes, and more. Appreciating that complexity gives us greater understanding of the fascinating variations in human behavior. Yet, when we step back and look at the totality of people's personalities, how all of these characteristics play out in people's lives, it's clear that some people's personalities work better for them than other people's personalities do. Certain patterns of characteristics are associated with effective behavior and a high level of psychological well-being, and other patterns of characteristics are associated with emotional and behavioral struggles. I'm not talking here about personality disorders or other psychological problems that qualify people for clinical diagnoses, like those we discussed previously. I'm talking about more common, run-of-the-mill problems that otherwise normal people have. In this final lecture, we're going to draw upon much of what we've learned throughout the course to take a look at the relationship between personality and what most psychologists consider healthy psychological adjustment. It's best not to think of psychological adjustment itself as a trait, as if it's a single personality characteristic that's associated with how well people function in their lives. Instead, it's more useful to view the degree to which people are well-adjusted or poorly adjusted as dependent on particular patterns or configurations of traits. Some combinations of traits promote psychological well-being, and other combinations diminish it. To understand adjustment, we have to look for personality patterns that are associated with effective behavior and emotional well-being. We also shouldn't think of adjustment as something that's a permanent and unchanging part of a person's personality. People's level of psychological adjustment can vary a great deal across time, so that at some points in their life, they're managing things just fine. But at other times, they're struggling psychologically. Nobody glides through life without psychological difficulties of one kind or another. Our level of adjustment can change over time for two reasons. The first is that situations change. Our personality might have worked well under one set of circumstances. In fact, we might have even been flourishing. But then when the circumstances of life changed, we lost our job, or had children, or moved to a new city, or were promoted into a position at work with too much responsibility. Those same personality characteristics were not as adaptive as they once were. Or maybe the opposite happened. Maybe you struggled psychologically when you were younger, but once you got out on your own, you managed life just fine. Our level of adjustment also changes over time because we change. Sometimes we change in ways that help us function better. We learn new strategies, have new experiences, become more mature, read self-help books, or talk to a counselor. And sometimes we change in ways that lead us to function worse than we did before. Maybe something shakes our self-confidence, or we become too depressed to manage life, or we have a traumatic experience that leaves us with post-traumatic stress disorder. So our psychological adjustment can wax and wane. But even so, at any particular time, some people are more adjusted than other people are. And that's what we want to examine here. To talk usefully about personality and adjustment, we have to define what it means to be well-adjusted. There's no definitive list of characteristics that define an adjusted, well-functioning person. But let me tell you what I see as five key ingredients that I think most psychologists would agree are necessary in order to say that a person is well-adjusted. Let me just list them first, and then we'll go through them one by one and talk about the personality characteristics that are needed in each case. I think it's safe to say that the main requirements of being well-adjusted are, one, a lack of genuine psychopathology or mental illness. 2, the ability to get along with other people and maintain some supportive, close relationships. 3, the ability to pursue and achieve one's goals. 4, the ability to cope with problems that arise in life. And 5, a sense of subjective well-being. A person who meets all 5 of these criteria is functioning reasonably well. If any one of them is missing over a period of time, however, the person is probably struggling psychologically. Let's go through these aspects of adjustment one by one and think about the characteristics that predispose people to meet or fail to meet each criterion. The first criterion for being well-adjusted, lack of psychopathology or mental illness, seems obvious. A person who currently has some serious psychological problem is clearly not functioning well at the moment. We've talked about personality disorders, which clearly compromise well-being, and there are other serious problems that are obvious indicators that people are not doing well, such as schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, PTSD, and depression. But these sorts of problems are topics for a course in abnormal or clinical psychology, and they're not fundamentally about personality characteristics, so we won't go into them in detail here. The second characteristic that signals good psychological adjustment is an ability to get along with other people and having some close, supportive, and high-quality relationships. People who can't get along with others, whose social interactions are full of conflict and negative emotions, and who can't maintain stable, supportive relationships with friends and romantic partners, family members, and people at work, are not dealing effectively with a central feature of human life. Healthy, well-adjusted people generally get along with other people. They have mostly positive interactions, and they have at least a couple of strong, supportive relationships that help to promote their well-being. The question is, what psychological characteristics do people need in order to have positive relationships with other people? Most notably, being higher in agreeableness and lower in neuroticism is associated with having higher quality relationships of all kinds. Or to look at it the other way, being low in agreeableness and high in neuroticism is associated with more conflict, negative social interactions, and unhappy relationships. And these traits also predict the stability of friendships and romantic relationships. People lower in agreeableness and higher in neuroticism have more trouble maintaining their relationships over time. People's beliefs about other people. For example, their general tendency to trust others, at least until someone shows they can't be trusted, and the value they place on relationships also influence how they approach their interactions and relationships with other people. In addition, characteristics that are associated with socio-emotional intelligence predict the quality and length of people's relationships. Socio-emotional intelligence involves skills that are needed to interact effectively with other people, such as the ability to read and understand other people, to empathize with others' problems and feelings, and to carry on meaningful conversations, as well as the willingness to compromise. So, people who are more empathic, more socially skilled, and less self-centered tend to have better relationships. As we discussed previously, self-regulation is also important for relationships. People who are better at controlling their reactions to other people get along better with others. In brief, there's a relatively small set of traits, beliefs, values, and skills that lead to better relationships with other people and thereby promote well-being. Third, well-adjusted people are able to pursue and achieve the goals they set for themselves, whatever those goals happen to be. They tend to behave in ways that help them perform up to their level of ability in school, and they tend to do a good job at work. The point is not that everybody should necessarily try to achieve great things or always strive to be the best. Those goals are okay for some people, But for other people, they aren't congruent with what's most important to them. Rather, from the standpoint of psychological adjustment, the important thing is that people should be reasonably effective at pursuing whatever goals they do have. As we saw when we talked about self-regulation, two characteristics are essential for achieving one's goals, almost without regard to what they are. One is conscientiousness. It's pretty difficult to achieve any goal if you're not reasonably conscientious. The other characteristic is the ability to self-regulate. As we discussed earlier, to achieve any goal, people have to make themselves take action, inhibit behaviors that would interfere with achieving the goal, and stay on task till it's accomplished. People who have difficulty with self-control skills involving initiation, inhibition, and continuation often have difficulty achieving their goals. In addition, it helps if people have an internal locus of control. You may recall that people with an internal locus of control believe that their outcomes are due to their own efforts rather than to external outside influences. So they're more likely to take action and to stick with tasks that become challenging. It also helps to have high self-efficacy, to believe that you're able to accomplish what you want to accomplish. Not having confidence that one can achieve a particular goal undermines motivation, keeps people from getting started, and leads them to give up quickly when problems arise. Being too confident can also create problems, but in general, people with higher self-efficacy, either in general or on a particular task, are more likely to accomplish the goals they set for themselves. The fourth requirement for psychological adjustment is to be able to cope with the problems that inevitably arise in life. If your life is anything like mine, rarely a day goes by without some problem or frustration or hassle. It's always something. Fortunately, most of these things are rather minor, but life also has its share of big, serious problems as well. Being well-adjusted means being able to cope with these kinds of events emotionally and to take appropriate actions to solve problems that arise when possible. None of us handles each and every problem with equanimity and grace. But people who regularly have trouble coping emotionally with their problems, or who have trouble doing what's needed to deal with them, struggle in life. You sometimes hear the word resilient used to describe people who handle their problems well and who bounce back quickly after major problems and traumatic events. Like adjustment, resilience isn't actually a personality characteristic as much as it's a description of how people respond when they confront problems and stressful events. So what does it take to cope well and to respond in a resilient fashion? First, it helps a great deal to be relatively low in neuroticism. People lower in neuroticism just tend to take things in stride better. Sure, they get frustrated and upset and stressed out when things fall apart, but their reactions are weaker and don't last as long as those of people who are higher in neuroticism. And they're also less likely to ruminate about their problems when there's nothing that can be done at the moment. And they tend to worry less about things that might or might not ever happen in the future. In addition to low neuroticism, optimism predicts how well people cope with stressful events. It helps to get through tough times if you're optimistic that things will eventually get better. Certain styles of coping also promote well-being. Research has identified many ways that people try to deal with problems in stressful situations. For example, some people try to reframe the situation in a positive way. Others take action to try to solve the problem. Still others distract themselves so they don't think about it, or they deny that there's a problem, or they seek support from other people, and so on. Personality predicts the strategies that people tend to use. For example, both extroversion and conscientiousness predict a greater use of problem solving and cognitive restructuring, that is, reframing problems in a more positive way. Whereas neuroticism is associated with a lower use of these strategies. Neuroticism predicts strategies that tend to be less effective, such as wishful thinking and withdrawal, although it also predicts seeking support from other people. Researchers have generally assumed that some coping strategies are more effective and more adaptive than others, which is certainly true. But evidence also shows that people who are flexible in the coping strategies that they use cope better overall. A meta-analysis of over 100 studies showed that coping flexibility was related to psychological adjustment and well-being and mental health. Different sorts of problems and stressors call for different strategies. Even strategies that have gotten a bad rap for being maladaptive and ineffective, such as distracting yourself or avoiding the problem or denying that the problem even exists, may sometimes be appropriate and effective. We don't know much about the particular characteristics that help people to cope flexibly, but researchers are now studying them. The final thing that people need for adjustment is high subjective well-being, the general sense that life is going reasonably well. You might think that if the other four criteria are fulfilled, people will naturally feel good about their lives and about themselves, but that's not necessarily the case. A person can be free of psychopathology, have good relationships with other people, be effective at achieving goals, and deal effectively with problems, yet still not be satisfied and happy. The world is full of such people, and it signals that something is amiss that is undermining the person's well-being, despite the fact that things seem to be going reasonably well. Sometimes it's tied up in people's expectations about themselves, expectations of how good they should be, how much they should accomplish, or what their lives should be like. Some people's expectations are so high that they will never feel satisfied with themselves and with their lives, no matter what. In other cases, people have internalized such negative beliefs about themselves that they can't ever feel good about things, even when life is going well. People whose parents neglected or rejected or abused them as children are particularly likely to carry negative self-images throughout their life. Still, other people struggle to find meaning in life. They can see that their lives are objectively going well, but they lack a sense of purpose or meaning. I could go on, but you get the idea. What all of these things have in common that undermines a sense of well-being is that people are talking to themselves in their own minds in particular dysfunctional ways. They're adding a layer of thinking and evaluation on top of their lives that's mostly unnecessary and making things harder on themselves than they need to be. Many of the sources of poor adjustment are self-inflicted, as people who ought to be reasonably satisfied think themselves into unnecessary unhappiness. If your life is such that you are free of serious psychological problems, you get along well with other people and have supportive, rewarding relationships, you're reasonably effective at pursuing and accomplishing goals that are important to you, you handle most problems that arise reasonably well, and you're generally happy and satisfied with life, then I'd say that, number one, you're a very fortunate person, and number two, you're pretty well adjusted. But what makes a person that way? I've mentioned some of the specific personality characteristics that affect well-being, but typically any single trait isn't enough to make someone well adjusted. It's broader patterns of traits that contribute to adjustment. But which patterns? In the broadest possible sense, who are the most well-adjusted people, and what are they like? To answer this question, researchers have used methods that statistically compare people across a large number of personality characteristics simultaneously. If you and I complete measures of, say, 20 characteristics of various kinds, we can calculate a statistic that indicates how similar you and I are across this set of 20 attributes. How much does my profile of personality characteristics, as a whole, resemble your profile? How much do we tend to score low and high on the same traits? Imagine that we did this, not just for you and me, but for several hundred people. We could calculate a statistical index of how much each person resembled every other person across this set of 20 characteristics. Looking at each pair of people in a sample of 100 individuals gives us millions of comparisons. With all of these comparisons in hand, researchers then conduct analyses that cluster people into groups of individuals whose profiles are very similar to each other. If you and I have similar psychological profiles, the analysis would put us in the same group. But if our profiles differ, one will end up in different groups. Essentially, this process identifies types of people based on their personality profiles. You may remember that I said previously that personality researchers don't talk about types of people very often, because most personality characteristics are not categorical types. Instead, we think of personality in terms of continuous trait dimensions. But in this case, when we're dealing with many different traits simultaneously, it makes sense to see whether we can identify types of people who share the same patterns of traits. These analyses tell us whether there are clusters or groups of people who resemble each other in their profiles of traits. If there are, then researchers examine how those groups of people, how those different types, differ from one another psychologically. The interesting thing is that across several studies conducted by different researchers on diverse samples of participants of different ages from around the world, the same three groups show up again and again. These studies repeatedly reveal three qualitatively different types of people. In every study, the researchers also tested models that included fewer and more than three types. But the results consistently showed that people fall into three large clusters. And for our purposes, the important thing is that those three basic types of people differ mostly in terms of their psychological adjustment. First, all of the studies identified a personality type that is reasonably well adjusted. The researchers called these people the resilient type. The data show that resilient people are low in neuroticism, which makes sense, but they're also higher than average in conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and openness. They also tend to have higher self-esteem and to score low in shyness. Overall, this resilient group had a personality profile showing that they were secure, conscientious, adaptable, and flexible people who had good relationships with others. These characteristics map pretty well onto the features of adjustment I just described. The other two personality types involved people who are less well-adjusted than the resilient group, but they are less well-adjusted in different ways. One group, called the over-controlled personality type, is characterized by high neuroticism. Over-controlled people not only experience a good deal of negative emotion, but they tend to be inhibited and shy. They also score lower in extroversion, and they're less sociable. Not surprisingly, then, over-controlled people have fewer relationships, and the relationships they do have tend to be less close and less secure. They seem to show an insecure attachment style, and like insecurely attached people, they have lower self-esteem. The picture one gets of the over-controlled type is of a person who tends to be unhappy and anxious and maybe somewhat lonely and who is not very sociable or secure with other people. The third personality type revealed in these studies is the under-controlled personality. Under-controlled people also score higher than average in neuroticism, although not as high as the over-controlled type. But their primary characteristic is low conscientiousness. Under-controlled people are, well, under-controlled. They're impulsive, undependable, and prone to engaging in risky behavior. They also tend to be low in agreeableness, sometimes to the point of behaving in mean and antisocial ways. None of the studies directly measured self-regulation, but one gets the sense that under-controlled people have problems doing what they're supposed to do and behaving themselves. The study showed that people who fit the under-controlled personality profile have fewer close relationships, that their relationships are less close and more difficult, with significantly more conflict, and their relationships tend not to last as long. They also tend to be less popular among their peers. Obviously, talking about psychological adjustment by classifying everybody into one of three personality types is an oversimplification that misses nuances and differences among people within each of these types. But it does reveal a couple of things about personality and adjustment. First, in general, there is only one basic way to be well-adjusted, but two basic ways in which to be poorly adjusted. Fundamentally, the difference between being well-adjusted and poorly adjusted lies in how high people are in neuroticism and how well they get along with other people. Second, the specific characteristics that create the resilient, over-controlled, and under-controlled personality types are correlated in non-random ways that produce these patterns. In other words, it's not the case that people develop a variety of separate characteristics, some good and some bad, and people who just happen to end up with a greater number of less adaptive characteristics have more adjustment issues. Instead, the various characteristics that create each of these three types of people tend to go together. People who have one of the characteristics in a profile also tend to have the others. Third, as we deal with problems in ourselves and in other people, it may be helpful to think about the degree to which those problems reflect the over-controlled profile versus the under-controlled profile, looking beneath the behavioral and emotional manifestations of adjustment problems allows us to think about the psychological characteristics and processes that undermine adjustment and lower well-being in any particular case. So, people differ in adjustment in three basic ways. But where do these patterns come from? Why are some people better adjusted than other people are? You won't be surprised that most of these traits have genetic basis. We've already talked about the fact that all of the big five personality traits have sizable heritabilities, which is also true of the characteristics that underlie self-regulation. So, people are genetically predisposed not only to be relatively well-adjusted or poorly adjusted, but people who are poorly adjusted are genetically predisposed to be prone to either the over-controlled or under-controlled pattern. But of course, genes account for no more than about half of the variability in these traits, so environment and experience clearly play a role. I won't rehash what I've already said about environmental and experiential causes of these characteristics, but let me say a couple of things about childhood development. Early work on adjustment and resilience tended to view people who deal particularly well with life as somehow unusual or special. Researchers had the sense that children who grow up to be well-adjusted adults must have some special genetic predispositions or have had some highly unusual parents or experiences. But as time went on, it became clear that adjustment and resilience generally develop naturally during childhood and adolescence, as long as things don't happen that interfere and mess up their development. Setting genetics aside, the most important thing that contributes to long-term adjustment is effective parenting, and it seems to do so by helping the development of important adaptive systems. Two dimensions of parenting in particular are critical. First, parents who are responsive and nurturing, who are warm, understanding, and empathic, both provide support to their children and model positive social behaviors. Children need ongoing love and support to become well-adjusted. At the same time, parents foster adjustment by having age-appropriate expectations for their children. Parents who have a rational approach to parenting, in which they discuss their expectations and rules with the child, foster a child's ability to understand the reasons for rules and to regulate his or her own behavior. This combination of warmth and support on one hand, and reasonable, explicit expectations on the other, has repeatedly been shown to result in positive psychological adjustment. This parenting style doesn't necessarily assure that a child will grow up to be well-adjusted. Many other things can intrude. But lack of warmth, support, and appropriate guidance certainly interferes with good adjustment. Parents who are cold or distant or rejecting lower children's long-term adjustment, as do parents whose expectations are either too lax or too strict. By the way, although researchers once assumed that adverse, stressful experiences in childhood undermine adjustment and resilience, we now know that the relationship between childhood adversity and adjustment is more complex. Certainly, extreme trauma can affect well-being. But as long as parents or other adults provide the needed emotional support and rational guidance, a certain amount of stress, struggle, and adversity in childhood actually promotes better long-term adjustment than if the child has no negative experiences at all. At heart, we all want mostly the same sorts of things: to be healthy and happy, to have good relationships, to achieve our goals, and to cope with all the stuff that happens. But because of our genetics and upbringing and experiences, we each develop our own ways of thinking, feeling, and behaving as we deal with the opportunities and challenges of life. I hope that gaining a better understanding of the great diversity in people's traits, motives, emotions, beliefs, values, and other characteristics helps you to make a little more sense out of other people's behavior. I think it can also serve as a reminder that underneath all of these differences, we're all just trying to get by. Many of the problems we encounter in life are fundamentally problems with how people think, feel, and behave. I'm hopeful that you can use what you've learned in this course to think about personality, your own personality, and the personalities of the people around you in a more informed and effective way.
We hope you have enjoyed these lectures from The Great Courses. Our courses are available online or via the free Great Courses app for smartphones and tablets, available on the App Store or Google Play. View our full library at thegreatcourses.com. Or as always, you can call our customer care representatives at 1-800-832-2412. Thank you very much.